Dine in Brooklyn is a 10-day event featuring restaurants in the greatest borough on planet Earth. Learn more at dineinbk.com and discover the best of Brooklyn's restaurants Monday, March 20th through Thursday, March 30th.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew, where we serve a weekly menu of industry commentary based on what the market has to offer. I'm Andrew Friedman from Tokeland.com.
I'm Jimmy Bradley from The Red Cat.
How are you feeling today, Jimmy?
I have the sniffles. I'm having a major, major allergy attack.
I figured
attack.
We should just fess up.
I apologize.
I could tell from your sign-on that it's going to be apparent.
I sound a little like our president when he was in the debates.
Well, glad we're both here. We're really excited for today's show. It's a bittersweet occasion because the timing is connected to the closing of a restaurant that's coming up this spring, May 27th to be exact. But we are thrilled to have executive chef and owner of Anissa Restaurant, which is winding up a 17-year run in Greenwich Village in New York City, Chef Anita Lowe. Welcome, Anita.
Thank you.
And also the chef de cuisine of Anissa, Chef Mary Atea. Mary, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
As people probably know, Anissa is I think it's fair to say, a beloved restaurant in the city. Again, been around for close to 20 years. Anita made the decision to close it not long ago and announced that. May 27th is still the operative date.
Yep.
And we thought it'd be just a good time to sort of talk about the restaurant a little, talk about that decision, talk about what each of you are thinking about for the future. We should say that the restaurant currently holds 3 stars from the New York Times. And also, Anita is a nominee for Best Chef New York City at the James Beard Awards this year. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, congratulations.
You're going, I assume you're going.
Yeah.
You're going to Chicago?
Yeah, we were going to be there for Common Threads anyway.
Well, okay.
We're going to be... We're going to be cooking a charity dinner there,
nice.
A fundraiser. So
great. So, let's jump. You know, when these moments are upon us, the first thing we sort of just like to ask is, how are you feeling about where you are? You know, you're about 2 months out from this moment. The restaurant's still obviously functioning and open. What are the emotions that are kind of swirling at this point?
Wow. Yeah, it took me a while to get here, but I think I'm kind of, you know, excited to take some time off, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm in waiting mode on some level, and then there's a lot of stuff that I have to do to actually get this place closed, but I can't really do it quite yet, so it's a little bit stressful, but at the same time, it's, there's a lot of things that I'm going to miss, but there's a lot of things I'm not going to miss. So,
What would be sort of the top one or two on each of those? If you can say, I don't know if you can say what you're not going to miss. Maybe you don't want to say that. What's the thing you're going to miss the most when you think about letting go of something that's been a defining part of you, probably safe to say for a good piece of your life?
I mean, certainly the people and the food, you know, the people being my staff, as well as, you know, my regular clientele.
Yeah.
It's kind of a place you call home, right?
Yeah, and just having, you know, having a professional kitchen to cook in is a great thing.
Yeah.
But I would, you know, Peter Hoffman, who had Savoy Restaurant, was in last night, and he was like, yeah, it's so nice not to have people... call you in the middle of the night saying something went down.
Right, 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 right.
Because the older they get, the more work they need. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You just mentioned, customers and, you know, regulars. And, you know, getting ready to do the show, I was doing some reading. And that seemed to come up a lot. I guess that's natural for a place that's been around this long. But, you know, I read the piece in The Times that announced the news, and there are all these people in the comments, including a lot of people saying, oh, we come every year from Florida, and, you know, we go there. We come down from I forget if it was Maine or Vermont, and you know, we always go there. What's the nature of your relationship with these longtime customers? It seems pretty deep at that restaurant, just from viewing it from afar.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, each person is an individual relationship.
Sure.
But I think, I'm not quite sure. A restaurant builds community, and on some level, it is about identity. And I think that multicultural identity, that diversity, speaks to certain people from different places.
Right.
Yeah.
And Mary, for you, I mean, you came to the restaurant, if I'm not mistaken, 2011?
Yeah.
As an intern.
Correct.
Freshly minted out of the Institute of Culinary Education.
Freshly trained and, yeah.
And that's, so you're basically, you had worked front of the house before.
I had worked front of house for about 5 years, and with always the hopes to go into the kitchen, but, you know, the lure of quick money and flexible hours
sure.
kept me there a little longer.
Right.
Which is great, because I think you actually, to be in a restaurant, need to know how all parts function and run. And I
right.
think it's given me a lot of perspective on a nightly service and what needs to get done.
Yeah. But having come, it's interesting to me, having been basically your entire kitchen career in one place.
Right, right.
And kind of risen up. It's funny, we were talking about, not dissimilar, we were talking about Tim Hollingsworth recently, who had come to the French Laundry as a commis and rose up to chef de cuisine there,
right.
and then eventually left. But it's an interesting thing. What for you has been the big positive of having that kind of stability and kind of growing up almost in one place?
I think it's really mostly given me like a comfortable environment to learn in. I'm very aware of what the restaurant represents and what it needs, and having started at the bottom and working each station, you know, I really know how everything should work. And it's given me a little environment to be able to create in and test in and kind of learn my, you know, perspective on food.
Yeah. I'm going to do my standard disclaimer. Whenever I tiptoe into the subject of women in the kitchen, I'm always, most women chefs I know are happy to talk about it, want to talk about it. I always say on this show, I don't feel like anyone gets into any business really to be I don't think people get into a business to become a woman chef or a woman writer or a black filmmaker, or I think people just want to do what they do. But it is, we did an interview for my blog where you were like, we got to, you know, something we need to talk about, Anita, when we sat down. But I've seen in interviews where you said you felt maybe you were spared some of the classic issues that a woman in the kitchen faces by coming up through the ranks in this particular restaurant.
Well, definitely, you know, having a female role model and
yeah.
mentor in the kitchen is definitely, I think, I haven't had to face, you know, having a male boss that might treat me differently.
Right.
And I think just in general, in some ways, coming up in the generation I came up in, I grew up playing on co-ed soccer teams and was better than most of the boys and sort of,
yeah.
I guess I haven't looked at that issue as specifically. Again, if I enter a different kitchen with a different mentality, you know, I'm sure I'll still face that down the road. But,
yeah.
you know, at Anise, I've really been allowed to thrive and be who I am.
Right. So in terms of what is next, I mean, this has been mentioned in some print interviews I've seen, but Anita, what's the current thinking in terms of, I assume there'll be a period of decompression.
I think there's going to be a long period of decompression.
I wish people could see the smile that just flashed when I said that word.
Ooh, yes.
A lot of fishing.
Yes, hopefully a lot of fishing. We're going to take the summer off.
Are you?
Yeah.
You're going to just go somewhere and disappear? Or?
I'm going to go out to Long Island
uh-huh.
and disappear. I think I've got a trip up to Maine, but other than that, I just want to relax, just, you know, enjoy. I have a little house out there. I'm going to enjoy my house.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we've got a whole bunch of trips planned in the fall, winter. And then we'll see. I mean, I still have my cookbook that I have to, that will be coming out in fall of 2018.
Okay. Which is?
It's going to be Cooking for One.
Yep.
It's called, the title is Solo. I can't remember what the byline is. It's been a while.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
That happens.
But Yeah, that's coming out in 2018, and I hope to continue to write. I'm not quite sure. You know, I'm going to be hosting a trip to the Yucatan with the Tour de Forks in over the Day of the Dead, which will be exciting.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll be teaching a cooking class there. Yeah, so... yeah, that's exciting. I'm not quite sure what else will happen, but
okay.
I'm willing just to let it happen.
Right. And for you, Mary, when you think about life as a chef beyond this place where you've kind of been all this time, like, what's that feel like? What do you... I mean, I've seen in print you two have said maybe another restaurant at some point.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think most people that are want to be chefs for life eventually see their own place, which I do. I still, you know... It's been a great experience working in one kitchen, but at the same time, I feel a little bit, you know, like I need to branch out,
sure.
see other places.
Yeah.
So I think in the next year, I definitely want to do some, you know, short-term stages at different places that could maybe teach me, you know,
right.
different styles.
Yeah.
I would love to do more specific things like bread making or uh-huh. charcuterie, kind of get those foundations just to feel like I have a little bit more of a broad knowledge.
Sure. Yeah. So if we, we'd love to just go through some kind of topics that are swirling around the industry right now. One of them is, you know, Anissa is a gratuity free, how do you say it? No tipping, gratuity
yes.
included. What's your preferred language for this?
Gosh,
or don't you care?
I think there's like legal issues with all of those
okay,
things.
Okay, so there's no, I'll say it then. There's,
yeah.
There's
well, no. I mean, I can, you know, yeah. as long as I don't write it on the menu,
okay.
like, you know, service included or something,
right.
like it has to be,
yeah.
you know, hospitality included.
Right.
Or
it can't be a service.
Yeah. Or it can't be tip included. It can't
right.
be tip included.
Right. But this is, you know, this is not as, this is not an easy a thing as it may seem to people, to lay people, right? Like, this is something that various chefs and restaurateurs have been trying to make happen for decades. I mean, not in the numbers that they are now, but if you go way back, you know, Barry Wine took this on years ago with the...
Oh, wow. I didn't
yeah.
know that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No.
Oh, yeah. Like, great. 92.
Yeah. You know, Alice Waters. There have been places over the years that have tried to make a go of this. It's something that's... you know, has the most critical mass probably now, but there are issues associated with this. Yes. Like, this has been a challenge for you guys in some respects.
Yeah. I think, you know, being among the first, I mean, we're clearly not the first, but the, you know, without having critical mass, without everyone or even the majority doing this, I think people don't understand the numbers.
Right.
So it looks like we're really expensive.
It's a value perception thing, right?
Yeah. But the thing is, like, we really, you know, when you do the math, unless you weren't leaving 20%, it's maybe a dollar more per person.
Right. For the meal, not per, you mean
yeah.
for the whole.
Yeah.
Yeah, so all in.
Maybe $2.
That doesn't count the perception part, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's not, you know.
Because we've spoken about a couple of people walking it back, right? Wasn't like Colicchio did it in one of his joints? And
yes.
We did it. We
I
had
think
a,
so.
A brief moment where
yeah.
a couple of operators that we spoke about.
David Chang walked it back.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
So did
Gabe
Stallman.
Stallman.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
I like your idea better.
Yeah.
fuck it, I'll just close the restaurant. Because, you know, I mean, I've been there, like, with the Harrison, you know.
Yeah.
Closing a business is closing a business. Ours wasn't that. You know, we couldn't make a deal with the landlord,
yeah.
you know, which is something similar, you
yeah.
know. You work for 14, 15 years, and then you just hand back the keys and walk away. So all the feelings are the same. You know, it's a different
yeah.
dynamic. You know, the all your customers coming back and saying, oh, we love you.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of adulation, and then there's a lot of a lot of feelings, you know, the highs and the
yeah.
lows and all of them.
But what's the, I mean, Jimmy, you too, if you want to get in, what's the case for this? And I will be honest, I remember when Danny Myers first started rolling it out, was it maybe the Modern was one of the first ones?
Modern
yeah,
was,
yeah. Yeah, and I went online and I looked at the pricing. And even having talked to a lot of people who do what you all do for a living about this a lot, I have to say, psychologically, it does look expensive. Like, that does... I'm not saying it's any more expensive, but I can see why that would become... why that's a hurdle, or why that's sort of something that needs to be figured out. Because I think that's a real tough mental thing to get customers back.
It's a strange one, you know, because the people go in Whole Foods and spend $4 for a head of arugula, you know, where you could get it for 50 cents somewhere else, but then they won't come in the restaurant and look at the same justifications the same way. It's really an odd perception thing, the way that I see it.
So what are people, what's the... Do we think this is something that's whose moment has come and it's just a matter of more people kind of jumping in the pool? Do we think this is going to happen?
I think it sort of... Well, I'm not quite sure, actually. I just think that the regulations that the city has imposed on restaurants sort of push you towards that.
Right.
Whether or not those regulations will change is
question. Hopefully.
Yeah. Is you know, who knows?
Right.
But, yeah, something's got to give.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think I read you speaking about this, too. Like, it's a small business thing, you know. Small businesses are going out, and national and multinational corporations are signing the leases. Like, who took the lease at the Harrison? A French bakery, you know,
right.
Who's got more presence in airports than anywhere else, you know. So, when we opened, you know, 17 years ago, me, you know, 18 years ago, there were no Starbucks in New York. There were no Jamba Juices. You know, there wasn't a bank on every corner. There's no such thing as a 7-Eleven in New York City. You know, these are all national, multinational corporations, and every single one of those moved into a lease that was a small family-run business. You can, the list is endless. Bookstores, you know, I mean, record shops. Like, it just goes on and on and on. And, you know, to Anita's point about the city and so on, go to Paris, go to London. You see, you know, 50, 70, 100, 300, in Paris's case, 400-year-old restaurant, you know, pubs. They have laws that says if it was this and you buy the building, it has to remain this and you can't charge more than that, you know. In our, you know, gloves-off capitalist New York City environment, it's not that. And, you know, I don't begrudge the landlords because in the 70s, the landlords, you know, you could get a 99-year lease in the 70s for below market, you know, and you could still have that lease now. So
how old are you?
Hey, you know, you read. When I did It's a Wrap, we took over Nevada Meats. Nevada Meats had a 99-year lease. They sold me a 30-year lease. They still had 66 more years on it. And they were in business. I'm sorry. They were in business for 15 years. They sold me 30 years.
Wow.
That's 45 years. So there was still 55 more years left on the lease, you know? And I got in, you know, on Broadway in the 60s for, I don't know, $6,000 a month, you know, for 2,000 square feet. So there's no real point other than the city's not defending small business. The city's treating all business the same. And what you see is what you're going to get. You know, you go to Bergen County, one of the most affluent counties in America, and there is no real small operating restaurants. It's Bennigan's, TGI Fridays. You know, all those people come to New York to come into the city to eat. And that's what's taking place in New York City. You know,
right.
It's kind of the Walmartification of America, of the city. Like, no one's really paying attention. They go for the value, and yet every time you go for the value, a small business is going out. And then they wonder why. Oh, we loved you. We wonder why. You're like, you really know why.
Well, this is when you say we loved you, wonder why. This is something that I wanted to ask both of you about. Because I've seen interviews where you've alluded to it. And I've heard this from every chef I know who's closed a restaurant in the last couple of years. Not the ones where, you know, all of a sudden they're gone, like overnight almost.
Like Baba G.
Or seemingly overnight. But this issue of, you know, all these people who come out of the woodwork when you say you're closing, who you hadn't probably seen in a long, you know, in a long time. I mean, I've heard this from so many people. Our friend Harold Dieterle, when he announced his closing, I heard it from our David Waltuck, who used to work with Anita years ago, you know, and Chantal, you know, this does seem
Peter
to happen
Hoffman.
That you announce your closing and then, you know, but, and by the same token, there is this proliferation of new restaurants that get all the sort of media oxygen, right?
Right.
So what can you just speak, both of you? I mean, I'd love to hear just how you speak to this and how much of that went into your thinking about, you know, the decision to close.
There was a million reasons
why
I closed. It wasn't simply financial. I think, you know, I've been doing this almost 30 years.
Yeah.
And I have joint issues. I have a replacement knee that's been that wasn't that successful. I just keep on having to get it redone. So, yeah, I.
And you tie that directly to being in a kitchen for
yes, exactly.
This long. That's what did it.
Yeah, but also yeah, but that but there's but that's also part of it. I think, you know, we all want to go see what's new and shiny,
right?
And you know, if you're not every day, and you're not new and shiny, then it's hard to continue to pack the restaurant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I could have just tried to keep, you know, I could have rolled back the no tipping, but it doesn't feel good. Like, it's becoming, there's too big of a divide between what the front of the house makes and what the back mm-hmm. of the house makes.
Sure.
And I don't want to be part of that, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think people, you know, there is a huge proliferation of restaurants in New York, and it's always like, you know, these 30 places opening in the spring, and it's hard to stay up on it. And I think you start to take the places that are around for granted. And, you know, and then when you are a little bit of a higher end restaurant, you know, people aren't coming in every day, which is completely understandable. But yeah, definitely. I think, you know, you're the sort of a place people rely on and expect to be there. And then when you're not, that's where everyone's coming out of being like, no, don't go.
Do you start to get almost, and it's funny because I feel like Anissa was open at a time where there were just fewer restaurants, right? Like the further you go back every 10 years and there were fewer new places. You know, you go back to the 80s and people will tell you, you know, you talk to someone like the Waltucks who had Chanterelle. And they're like, there just weren't that many restaurants, you know.
Is
like,
that true?
Like,
I don't remember.
They will say that.
Yeah.
They will literally say that.
Yeah.
Like they felt like there were like 20 places that they were, you know, competing with, and that was sort of it. But I just want, you know, and then currently you talk to people who open now, and so many new operators, unless they have these, you know, unless they're part of like the Steven Starr Group or Danny Meyer's Group, or you know, where they have all this money and marketing and. You know, I know so many people, they'll tell you, like, after a year and a half, 2 years, they start to see the business tail off, like, way faster than it used to. I just wonder, though, did it make you, like, when you have this conversation, does it make you almost weary? I imagine if I were in the position of a chef these days, having to constantly, because my perception of this restaurant was, you know, really beloved, really well-respected, and then there were these things that would happen that would sort of give you a little bit of a PR, for lack of a better term, boost, right? Like you did the Top Chef Masters, you get a bump. You the 3-star review in the Times, you get, you know, like there were these things that give you like an injection, right?
Right.
But who wants to live like that, where you're like, oh, it's been like a year since that happened. Is that kind of what it felt like a little bit? In order to stay, feel like you were top of mind for, you know, the masses?
You know, I never did all of that calculated. You know, it wasn't like, okay, it's been a year, I need to go do
something.
TV or something. Yeah. But yeah, it is tiring that you have to constantly reinvent yourself to stay in the public mind, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not somebody who wants to bring attention to themselves. Like, you know, I'm very shy. It's not something
right.
that
you're
comes
not
naturally
like a showboater, right? You're
no.
not, yeah.
Which is, you know, why you didn't work in the front of the house, too,
exactly,
right?
You
know, like
exactly.
We chose these cores for certain reasons.
Yeah.
People are like, you know, they expect you to be this marketing machine, you know, this all over the social media, whatever it is. But really, you know, creative people aren't the best marketers, never have been, never will be. You know, it's a fascinating thing that they assume that you'll get it all done this way.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the other point with the new restaurants, you know, and the flashy and yeah, the time that we live in, that's what people want. But at the end of the day, just because you sign a lease and get open doesn't mean you're going to stay open, and it doesn't mean you do good work, you know. Just because you're popular doesn't mean you do good work. Obviously, we live in this age where not the best things are being rewarded in a very high way right now. So it's really difficult, you know, for something that's, you know, 15, 17, 20 years old. You know, if you're not the classic, you know, if you're not the Le Cirque, you know, if you're not the Grenouille, you know, if you're not even you know, we're talking about David and Karen at Chanterelle. You know, they put 30 years in, right? Yeah. And, you know, it still didn't get him into the classic, we'll be here forever, you know? It's much more of...
Yeah, but I don't believe any restaurants are in that. With the exception of Chez Panisse, I think in this country, that's like everybody's on the clock. I really believe that.
Well, I guess now we're looking at things like Four Seasons. Yeah, sure. But, you know, I don't know. Grandway, there's some. There's some.
Okay. Well, on that note, let's take a break.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Chef Anita Lowe and Chef Mary Atea of Anissa Restaurant, which is winding down a 17-year run in New York City. There's still 2 months that you can go there, and you should do that. And we're going to take a quick break and continue this conversation when The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew comes right back.
Dine in Brooklyn is a 10-day event featuring restaurants in the greatest borough on planet Earth. Taking place Monday, March 20th through Thursday, March 30th, Dine in Brooklyn is celebrating the five-star flavors that make Brooklyn a must-taste destination. From the Asian-inspired flavors at Nightingale 9 and Carroll Gardens to classic barbecue at Mabel's Smokehouse in Williamsburg, the Brooklyn restaurant scene has something for everyone. Unwind with a bottle of vino at Soigne Restaurant and Wine Bar in Park Slope, dream of summer at Clemente's Crab House in Sheepshead Bay, or be transported to a Gothic Irish monastery while drinking a Guinness in hand at the Wicked Monk in Bay Ridge. Restaurants are offering their choice of $28 prefix three-course dinners, $15 two-course lunches, or $12 weekend brunch. Visit dineinbk.com to view all of the participating restaurants and their menus. Make your reservations now to discover the diversity of flavors that Brooklyn has to offer. Dine in Brooklyn is taking place Monday, March 20th through Thursday, March 30th. Learn more at dineinbk.com.
Welcome back to The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew. We've been talking with Chef Anita Lowe and Chef Mary Atea of Anissa Restaurant in New York City, which, again, is closing after 17 years on May 27th. So still time to get there. And also, I neglected to mention at the top of the show, there is an event happening in about a week and a half with Jen Lewis, a book event at the restaurant on Monday, April 3rd. And what exactly is that, Anita?
Well, Jen Lewis is an amazing chef from Portland, Oregon. She had a Lincoln and Sunshine Tavern. She just closed Lincoln Restaurant, which was, you know, one of the best meals I had in Portland, which is a big, you know, food destination now. And she is opening Ray Restaurant, which is an Israeli restaurant in the same place. But she just came out with a new cookbook called The Book of Greens. And it's a beautiful, beautiful cookbook. And she's coming to do a dinner, a book dinner at Anissa on the 3rd. We'll be cooking five courses from her cookbook.
So all out of her book, not really not a collaborative, like one course year. It's like it's a real showcase for the book.
Well, I mean, I took it as, well, yeah. I mean, we're not putting ourselves too much into it.
Yeah.
Although dessert... I think her, you know, we gave her a recipe for pandanus ice cream, so we're going to do a more plated, and we're not going to just serve ice cream.
Sure.
Try to make it more Anissa-like.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're basically taking recipes, all the savory recipes are from her book.
Got it. Okay. And then you're also a co-chair for No Kid Hungry?
Yes, the next day
and
on the 4th.
The next day you have an event with them.
Yes, that's very exciting. I'm a culinary coach chair along with Bryce Schumann. And every year we have a big fundraiser where I think we've got, I want to say we have 15 chefs this year or something like that, 15 to 20, something like that. And we're each cooking for two tables of 10 sit-down dinner.
Great.
So.
And I assume people could go to No Kid Hungry's site
yes.
and learn all about that. And
yes.
Great. Okay. Well, thanks for doing all that stuff.
Yeah, exciting.
Can we talk for a minute about the executive chef de cuisine relationship.
Uh-oh. Sure.
Can we not?
Oh, yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Okay. I have to just, as a footnote, I mean, it's not a secret, right?
You two are
also partners outside the kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, most couples, you know, can't get along on a tennis court. what, you know, in the collaborative process, you know, of, in a restaurant like this, which, you know, like when a new dish is just kind of bubbles up from wherever these things come from, what was that? What is, you know, for another 8 weeks or so, what's that process, that collaborative process like? How does that work?
Well, I think it's been mostly Mary now. You want to talk about it?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think initially when I started and, you know, spent a year or two and was, you know, kind of learning food initially and then starting to put my own spin on things, I would formulate ideas and then run them by Anita, and she would kind of nail them home, like be like, well, try the, you know, she edit. Helps form. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of collaborating on dishes together, I think, where maybe I would get 3/4 of it and then she would refine it, or, you know, which was a great educational process.
Yeah.
And then I got a lot more comfortable with, you know, just starting to complete dishes myself. I mean, they're not always winners. I'll bring them to her in the office like she's a judge and explain it. And, you know, we'll get obviously notes and little tweaks. But, yeah, I definitely think in the past couple of years I've, you know,
my dishes really aren't always winners either. So
right.
A lot of times you do it once and then you have to either trash it or
base hits get you in the base hits get you in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
you
know?
Nobody hits home runs all the time.
Yeah.
Dude, there's high expectations, but
I mean, I think we collaborate pretty well when it comes to creating dishes.
Is that a good analogy for it, do you think?
For sure.
Yeah,
definitely. Because, I mean, she has many years of experience and I think an incredible palate and can pick up on little, you know, notes of, you know, maybe a touch more of this. So it's great because then I can taste and be like, oh, yeah, you're, you know, I can see what parts I need to work on.
And, right. And then file that away for the next.
Right.
Have you started to release the spring menu?
We started. We need to,
So is there a dish you care to elaborate on?
We had this little warm spell where, you know, it was like
a little fake
60,
spring.
And I was like, oh, you know, people, you know, our purveyors had wild spring onions and peas. And I was like, oh, chilled pea soup. And then all of a sudden it dropped and I was like, oh.
Yeah, as we sit here, it's like maybe crawling up to 30 degrees outside.
Yeah, I'm not sure people want chilled soup right now, but... But it's on the menu.
Got it.
It's
coming again.
So yeah, nice little spring.
It's a beautiful dish
with hearts of palm and snow crab,
tarragon,
spring onions, tarragon. Simple, but
sounds delicious.
Anita, can you? I'd love to just have you. You kind of dabbled in. Dabble's too casual a word, but you know, were involved in some concepts that I guess now you would probably call like fast casual. You know, there was Rickshaw, and Bar Q.
Bar Q wasn't fast casual.
You wouldn't put that in that category. No. Yeah. But what's your take on this whole, you know, more and more chefs are getting involved in you know, chefs who come from a high-end background are getting involved in concepts that, I'll just say, like, aren't as high-end, right? They're more casual. Sometimes they're more fast casual. What do you think is the driver behind that? Do you think it's just the economic model? Do you think it's people looking for maybe a little less intense of a job situation, which people seem to be seeking more? Do you have any insight into, you know, we had our first show this season. We had Mark Ladner on, who's getting ready to do this pasta concept. And it just seems like more and more people are looking for that magic bullet. Do you think it's just a financial attraction?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I think when chefs are trying to do high end, you know, there's a lot of labor involved. It's, you know, with rents, it's difficult. And then they go and they see a fast casual model, and you can do it with less labor. You can do it with cheaper labor, and not necessarily trained labor. And it's like, you know, people are like, well, that's where the money is. And then there's a little bit less pressure. I don't know. I find that a little bit depressing, actually.
I was going to say, it certainly doesn't make it any more fun, though.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like corporations that are very successful fold other small companies into their company, and they have a very diverse portfolio. And so, you know, you have some higher end and then some medium end and some low end, and that's how they survive. You know, like Anita was quoted as saying, grow or die. You know, it's not just adding the same restaurant over and over again, but if you can tweak your portfolio to, like, for instance, you know, the Red Cat was the Red Cat, then the Harrison was higher end, and the Mermaid Inn was lower end. And I was like, I want to do that. I want a 1-star, I want a 2-star, I want a 3-star. That way I could attract this kind of labor, but I could move this kind of labor around, you know? So, like, if you're really great as a busboy at the 3-star joint, we're going to make you a waiter at the 1-star joint right away, you know, and we're not going to need to spend as much time because the expectations are different, you know. So it really, to me, had it was alluring that way. But then, you know, when I had It's a Wrap, working with 18-year-old kids that have no desire to be really working, they're just looking for the paycheck. It's a slog, you know, and doing delivery, like, the true story, you know, I had a delivery guy. One of my business partners was a surgeon, thank God. The delivery guy goes out and he never comes back, you know, so people are calling, freaking out. So send people to go look for the delivery guy. A car hit him, ran him over, left him on the side of the road. Somebody comes by, steals the bike, you know, and the kid's still just laying there on the side of the road. So one of the delivery guys is like, all right. So they call me up. So I call up the surgeon guy. He was like, call an ambulance. And I meet him at the hospital. Like, shit like that goes down all the time. It's really, really odd, you know? So,
wow.
Quick service. Quick service isn't all it's cracked up to be. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
on that note.
I don't know what to say about that story, Jimmy.
Sorry. I didn't mean to be a buzzkill, but, like, I wanted to give you
a word of warning.
A little, that wasn't just shock value. That's a true story, you know? That went down in 1997, you know? So,
okay. Abrupt change.
Yeah,
abrupt
please.
Change.
Come on, Andrew.
I just have to ask because it's a particular fascination of mine. I did a book with a former chef of the White House once. I just have to ask about this state dinner that you did.
So cool.
In 2015. What was that whole experience like? How'd you find out you were going to? First of all, how'd you find out you get a call from the West Wing, the East Wing,
State
who,
Department.
What was the how did it happen? How'd that go down?
Anita got an email. She was about to delete. She was like, this is spam, right? And I was like, no, that's a .gov address. I think that's serious, you know.
Was that the first contact? Was an email?
Yeah.
Like, would you be interested?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And
okay.
Signed your president.
Right. Yeah. Obama called me.
Anyway, so what you get this email saying, would you be interested in doing this state dinner?
Yeah. And I was like, oh my God. You know, I mean, of course. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, I remember when Marcus did the first one. And I was like, that is so cool. I wish I could do that. You
really?
Know? Yeah. Yeah, and
this was not that long ago. This was less than about 2 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And from how far out did you get? Did you know this was going to happen?
Not very far. I had basically 3 days to come up with, you know, 12 items because you have to. They want to test things.
Yeah.
Mary had to go and cook for Michelle, which was awesome because I was out of the country.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
As prelude to this dinner.
Yeah, we had to present all the options for the four courses, and then she tasted all of them. And
wow. And where did that where did that happen? Was that in the residence?
One of the rooms in the East Wing.
Uh-huh.
I think that was like I hit my maximum level of stress, so everything seems easy after that.
Uh-huh.
It was like, you know. They're like, she's going to be up there. You're going to meet her as you present your first course. And I was like, okay, awesome.
Did you have the gig when you did that, or was that sort of audition?
No, well, I think it was...
Formality?
I mean, yeah, I think more or less we had the gig, I guess, if it was completely terrible. I mean, the pressure was like, oh, my God, what if you know, this is horrible. And she's like, never mind, cancel these people. So yeah, but the staff, the kitchen staff there were incredible. Really
everyone
lovely
was at the White
wonder.
House.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Everyone.
And did you get to meet the Chinese president?
We did.
Neat. Yeah.
We did. And, you know, Obama and, yeah, Michelle gave
hugged
a,
me. Yeah.
Gave
yeah.
Mary a hug. I got a handshake.
Whether did you use
but
the,
I had met her before.
Did
so,
you
yeah,
use
we
the vegetables
tight.
From
we
the garden?
Tight.
Was it in season?
Well, yeah, the. I don't know for the dinner because it was serving so many people. That
how many was it?
But was it like 200?
200
yeah.
people.
But when I did the test dishes, they had a ton of stuff from the garden uh-huh. to use since it was, you know, it's just making a few plates.
And what about the dinner itself? I don't know if it's still this way. It used to be that those dinners are quick. Is it still like
oh
that?
Oh, my God, it was quick.
Like,
oh, my
it
God.
It used to be like 40 minutes for like...
Yeah,
like
35 minutes, four courses.
It is still like that.
Yeah. 200
it's
people.
Like six tables lined up, 10 people at each table, just
yeah.
shooting the food out.
It was a little scary. Yeah. And everything had to be like, you know, ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, just in case they wanted to start earlier or, you know, it wasn't, you know, we were... You know, it's not about us. It's, you know, it's like
sure.
wasn't going to have a little diva hissy fit over anything. So, yeah. but
and was that a big? I mean, was that like a high point for you too? I mean, I would imagine that would be kind of. I mean, that would seem to be a huge deal.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah. I mean, that was a highlight of my career.
Yeah.
I think
it was yeah. that big a thing.
Oh, for me, yeah, I think yeah, especially since. Yeah, it's well, God, yeah.
As of now, that's, yeah.
Yeah. My heads of state? Awesome.
High point. The Obamas?
Yeah. 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 And, yeah.
What, so, Anita, as we wind down here, when you think about, I mean, and you're not quite at the, you know, we've still got a little ways to go, but when you think about this restaurant, what are you most proud of about Anissa?
I mean, I think, yeah, it's. I think it's. That's a hard one. I think I've been able to build family there. I feel like, you know, when we had that fire.
Yeah.
We were closed for 9 months, and every single one of my staff came back except for one. That was really.
And just so people know, we're talking about roughly how many people?
24 at that yeah. time, something like that. 23, 24.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just recently, they like a couple of my staff, front of the house staff, came from, found out we were closing and came all the way from Portland to come dine one last time at Anissa.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's really yep. heartwarming.
Which Portland are we talking about?
Portland, Oregon.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's that says a lot. I mean, that's this thing that everybody, right? I mean, this is the thing about this. I'm not in your business, but, you know, this kind of surrogate or additional family aspect of it is, it's pretty unique. I mean, it you don't see something like that, and I think a lot of businesses, certainly you don't associate it with corporate life. I mean, that's pretty astounding. Both those facts are pretty amazing.
I think I learned that from the Waltucks, actually.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, we've always tried to make everyone sit down for staff meal. It doesn't always happen, but
right,
you know, and that really does create. I mean, eating together, it's bonding. So.
Right, and those relationships. I imagine you. It sounds like. I mean, if people are coming from across the country. A lot of those relationships will probably endure beyond the life of the restaurant.
Yes. Yeah. Hopefully. Yes.
Yeah, which is great. Okay. Well, with that. We've come to the end of our time. Congratulations on 17 great years.
Thank you.
And congratulations, Mary, on everything you've done there.
Thank you.
And again, the show lives on, you know, in theory forever on iTunes, so I don't know when people are listening to this, but if you're listening to it before May 27th, 2017, you can still visit Anissa and have a last meal or two there, and we would encourage you to do that. And we also need to thank David. I have not thanked you the last few weeks. Get on the mic.
Get it together.
It's okay. I work in the shadows.
I know. David, can you plug your podcast, which we've also been meaning to do?
Oh, yeah, sure. It's called What's the Story? It's a fictional storytelling podcast where we search for the best version of the truth. WTSpodcast.com.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Jimmy, anything else?
Yeah, I want to tell stories with David.
I want that too.
Okay, just don't tell that story about your delivery guy again.
I'm never going to tell that story again.
Wait, I've got a quick story real quick. I went to the Red Cat for dinner with my mom for her 60th birthday, and it was fantastic. So highly recommend the Red Cat to everybody.
Oh, wow, thank you, David.
Big love fest here. Yeah. Okay, thank you, David. I guess that's it. You can follow us on @ChefPodcast at Twitter, The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew on Facebook. And with that, I'm Andrew Friedman.
I'm Jimmy Bradley.
And we will be back next week on The Front Burner with Jimmy and Andrew. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.